Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Transform the way you hunt with the all-new Base cellular trail camera connected by the Moultrie mobile app. Moultrie Mobile's industry-best app gives you complete control over your camera settings, up-to-the-minute updates from the field, and other interactive scouting tools on your smartphone or computer. Features like weather forecast, advanced species recognition, interactive maps, and a whole lot more. For more information and to make your purchase, visit www.moultriemobile.com.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist. Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
You're listening to The Truth on the Houndsman XP Podcast Network with host Steve Burkholder. Interviews with the greatest houndsmen hunting the greatest hounds in coonhound history. We take you beyond the losses and the wins. Steve digs deep into the stories behind the scenes. Do you have what it takes to achieve greatness? It all starts with the truth.
Susan Perriman, and we actually have their son James with us today, and he's going to kind of share of what it is to with us all, what it is kind of like to grow up in the, I guess, in the houndsman family. I think he's at least a third generation houndsman. And James, how are you doing today?
Not too bad. About you, Steve?
We're doing awesome. Well, I want to say we're excited to have you on today and share a little bit about your childhood growing up. We got to talk to your mom and dad a little while ago and really enjoyed that side of it. And I'd love to hear from you today on kind of what it was through your eyes growing up as a as a child and, you know, being a third generation Houndsman like that. So why don't you tell us a little bit of James, who you are and kind of where you live, and we'll get started here.
Yeah, I'm James Pearman, and I'm from Perkins, Georgia. Used to live down on the Florida-Georgia line, then we moved up here. But, yeah, I mean, I just enjoyed coon hunting my whole life, Steve. That's my thing, you know. I just, going from the time I was a baby, my daddy was going with him and Johnny Merritt. They coon hunted every night together, you know. And they had some really good dogs together back then. And we just loved it, you know.
Did you, in years growing up, what have you, now I know you obviously coon hunted, but did you hunt anything else with hounds when you grew up?
Oh, yeah, we run deer dogs and hog dogs, and I mean, we done a little bit of all of it. We just hunted anything, you know, and I mean, we trapped. We done whatever we could do to make a little money, you know.
So, absolutely. I understand that you're, that and actually George and Susan were actually doing this here over at your mom and dad's place, and they're sitting here with us as well, sitting in and listening, may comment on a story here or there that we're looking forward to hear from. But was hunting with coon, with hounds, was that kind of your passion from the get-go? I mean, is that what, did you always go back to? Is that what really you was passionate about more so than the other?
Oh, 100%, Steve. I mean, I knew what I wanted to do it on a professional level one day, you know, and I didn't think we'd ever get to where we at today, you know, back then, because I'd go to a, you know, back then it was a $15 hunt, and, you know, I wish I'd have known about a blue book back then, because that's, you know, that's how I got my lessons from Buddy DeLetre and Paul Sheffield and Cecil Pittman. I'd be sitting at the house and realize I'm pretty sure I won that cast, but I didn't get paid no money. You know what I mean?
Right. I think we could. I think we could all agree that even though they had blue books back then, I really think that our blue book was simply entering them hunts and coming home and trying to figure out what went wrong.
That's exactly right.
They took Well, back then they even had some $10 hunts. Took a lot of $10 and $15 hunt lessons, I guess you could say. But you know, James, don't you think that looking back, I know for me, looking back, I wouldn't want it any other way, really. I mean, you could read the rules. You know, we see it so much in today's, what we do now. You know, obviously the purses are a lot bigger. You know, your boys, I mean, what a weekend they had. They just come off of, I don't know, what did they, I know they was in Junction, Illinois, and share with the viewers, I think they, what did they end up winning?
15,000.
Yeah. Yeah, and I know Colt won both nights and Justin won one night.
Yep.
And he got his dog's foot hurt, is that right? Couldn't hunt him last night?
Yep, couldn't hunt him Saturday night. He had, he's Randy Morgan, you know, he's real good to Justin. He let Justin borrow a dog to hunt Saturday night, so we was fortunate to get to do that, you know?
Right. But, you know, you could read the rules, but you would have to have that real life. There's nothing like the real life experience, and I think that's how a lot of us learned, is you know, them type of situations. So I fully well know what you're saying on that.
Hey, when you when you was broke as I was back then, them $15 lessons you never forgot about, because you didn't have no gas money to go back to the next one. So you learned them rules pretty quick. You didn't forget none of them. They taught you. I can tell you that.
Right. Absolutely. So, James, go back to when you was, obviously we had heard from your mom, Susan, we otherwise known as Mama Perriman. We know that, she holds the ship together, but she actually coon hunted quite a bit with you, as a child growing up too as well, right?
Oh yeah. We all, every weekend we was at this place, what I can remember the best, but when I was young, they had this place called Coon Camp, and it was probably, I don't know what, 5 or 6 miles from the house there. And we'd go down there and we'd pitch a tent, you know, and we'd start coon hunting at dark time, and we'd quit at daylight and sleep until you woke up sweating in that tent, you know, and then
I remember them days.
Yep, and you could walk down that, it was all on a big bluff. You had some stairwells to go down there. And you could actually go down there and maybe get a little water to throw on you, you know.
Right.
But Yeah, and it wasn't no back then. I mean, you shoot a coon out, we cleaned it. And when I say clean it, you caked it out and everything, because we had a fur drying house, you know.
Tell us a little bit about the fur drying house.
Yeah, we was, tell you the truth, I hated it, Steve, to tell you the truth. But I knew that Daddy and Mom was making a little bit of money with it, so if I killed a coon, that's where it went, you know?
Yeah.
And, but them scraping them hides, I would hope Daddy would have all that done before I got home from school, but it didn't always work out that way, you know what I mean?
Right.
But yeah, I mean, all the memories is good, and I would wish that Colt and Justin would have got to see that kind of part of it, you know?
Yeah, George, what was that fur house? I mean, I know that you guys did it for a lot of years. Touch a little bit on the fur house for you.
To me, it was a way to make money. But I'm gonna change the subject here for a minute. My wife kept us all together. If she didn't, I mean, not only us, but all the other kids, they stayed there with us. And that's all I wanted to recognize her. Yeah. She's the backbone of all of it. I'm not nothing really, but old time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's safe. It was definitely a family tradition. So, you know, I remember as a kid, growing up, you know, back then the fur hides alone, now this wasn't tanned out, but the fur hides alone, you could get some pretty good amount of money for a hide. George, what would you remember back then? You know, you've hunted for quite a few years. What would you remember selling coon hides for? You know, maybe at the peak or
anywhere from $30, $35, $40 a hide. But that was a number one hide. When you go to the cellar, he'd have four piles. Well, the high dollar ones, you wouldn't have many in it. Then the next one, you'd have a few in it. And then the medium hide, you'd have a pretty good hide. And this one over here wasn't just throwed over there.
Yeah.
That wasn't no good. And it took a lot of hides to make any money.
Right. Right. But yeah, absolutely. So that's what you would have grew up kind of early on remembering on the fur house, yep.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm telling you, I remember, you know, everybody had them hip waders. You'd see all them other boys. Me, I was so little. I had a pair of hip waders, but I had to put my tennis shoes inside of them where they'd stay on my feet. And if you ever hunted down around the marsh where we hunted at, your boots didn't stay on your feet. You bogged down. I remember one time I thought I was going to have to go get a D9 dozer to pull Cecil Pittman out of that marsh one night. So you could bog down in that pretty good.
Absolutely. So early on, James, what was some of the like your first dog that you may have been able to call your own, or you know, one that you really enjoyed hunting? Would you know? I mean, would there be one that would stand out for you in your mind?
Yeah, when I was younger, me and Daddy actually got her started, and that was the little female called Maggie, and I got her right after he got her started, and I got to keep hunting her a pretty good bit. And I kept telling him how good she was doing, and him and another older gentleman, Jack Wade, they jumped in the truck. They wanted to go look at her one night, you know. And sure enough, cut her loose, and she come through there driving the track, you know, pretty good. I mean, just really, really good. I mean, motoring through there. And about that time, and I didn't think she was going to come treed this close to the truck, but it was good for them because they got to see how good she looked like that. And she got treed about 100 yards off the road there, and I said, oh, yeah, boys. I said, I told you I had her right, didn't I? Then I got to thinking I better quit talking because she'll probably be slick when I get in there. But sure enough, she had a coon, and they went on to the house, and I was glad because she did make two slick trees after that. So
they didn't
get to see that part of it.
Yeah, go ahead.
Biggest bull coon I ever seen.
That's the one that she'd treat that night.
And he was so funny. He said, you better turn that bulldog loose. He said, so that coon will eat Maggie.
Yeah.
Well, how old would he been at this time, James, probably?
13, 15?
Yeah, 13, yeah. 14, something like that.
Absolutely. Before we get into more of the dog side of it or whatever, did you do anything else growing up as a kid? I know you obviously, you know, hunted with hounds and that kind of thing. But is there anything else that you would have done growing up? I know sharing with your mom and dad, you guys probably was a little raised a little bit like we did. We didn't have a lot. So we made do with what we had. We also had a lot of fun doing a lot of them, you know, outdoor. Everything we did was outdoors.
Right. And yeah, I did. I played baseball for a while and was actually pretty decent at it. And I actually started rodeoing. I was doing a little calf roping and more bull riding than anything. And actually, I didn't know it until the coach told me that if you make money in a professional sport, you can't play high school baseball. Well, I thought, well, if I could just win a little bit riding bulls, you know, I don't need to be playing baseball. Right. Well, I realized I should have stayed playing baseball because I wasn't making no money bull riding. So that didn't, I mean, it went on a while. And that my graduation night, the night before, I got stomped by a bull. Broke three ribs in my sternum, and I told my mama, I said, I ain't gonna be walking down that aisle tomorrow night. She said, if I gotta drag your happy ass down that aisle as hard as you've been on me to get you through school, you going down that aisle.
And, I would say you probably walked down that aisle. George, tell us a little bit of what you remember, or Susan, either one of you can chime in about James and his bull riding venture.
Well, after he got hurt pretty bad, he come to me right at the last 10 or 15 minutes before he had to come out on his bull. He come over here to me, and he says, Daddy, if you'll pull my rope for me, I'll ride the bull. And I looked at him. I said, Son, I love you either way, whether you come out on him or you don't. I said, I love you to death. He said, no, I'm gonna come out of it, but you're going to go over there with me. I went over there with him. His little old legs was shaking on him, you know, had his fish. I said, and as I was pulling it, I said, you can turn him out still. I said, you can turn him out still. He never, back then, never cussed in front of me. He said, pull the son of a bitch and let me go. And I pulled it up, rolled it over, and handed it to him. And he rode the bull. But I always said he's probably too scared to fall off.
We actually won that rodeo that night. I had a broke hand at the time.
On that one?
It was at that beach rodeo, yep.
Yeah, the Jacksonville Beach.
Yeah. What, George, you had shared earlier Touch, and I think it's something that's important, where when he'd gotten the time where he'd gotten thrown off, and share a little bit with the folks what you had shared with
them. Well, the bull come out and started spinning and threw him in between him and the bull in the chute. Well, naturally, when I seen what happened, I jumped over the fence and went over there. I looked at him. I said, get your ass up from there. I said, get over the fence. He gets up. But there was a reason I said that. And the reason was, you never put anybody in shock. If you go up there and baby somebody like that, they going to naturally say, well, I'm hurt real bad. Well, he was hurt bad. But I wasn't going to let him know it until I got him out of there.
Yeah.
There was a reason behind that.
Absolutely.
I told him I wasn't riding in that ambulance. He was taking me.
I bet you rode in the ambulance.
No, I did not. I wouldn't get in there.
Your dad ended up taking you.
Yeah.
Is that kind of when you decided that you weren't going to rodeo much after that?
Yeah, pretty much, because at that time, it was right around that time that we found out that my first wife was pregnant with Colt, you know?
Yeah.
And I hadn't have no choice. I couldn't afford to go do that, you know, right. No more.
Right. So, would you done anything, any other type of hunting or fishing or anything like that growing up as a kid?
Oh yeah, we bass fish, and we saltwater fished and caught red and trout, and I mean we've done a little bit of everything. I mean, we lived off of fish and deer meat, and I mean people think that's crazy, you know.
And
but
was like that, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm telling you, we was tight. Me and my daddy, right, and you know, we've had our hard times, don't get me wrong, together, but he's pretty tough back then, you know. But we'd fish together and coon hunt together, and when he got a little age on him, you know, and him, Mr. Johnny would and I got where I could get to the dogs, and I'm talking, when I say get to the dogs, I'm talking 8, 9 years old, a boy going in there getting two dogs and coming out. Why, them two might have had a little mixed drink at the truck while they was waiting on me, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
But when you got that kind of passion for it, nothing could stop you, yep. You know?
Absolutely. You now, you deer hunted some too, is that right?
Oh, yeah, we deer.
What's your earliest recollection of deer hunting?
The one time, you know, I was younger, my daddy took me to go deer hunting. I ain't never been in no stand by myself. You know, I was probably 7 or 8 years old, huh? And he put me up in that stand and told me he'd be back. Yeah, it was way up there. And told me he'd be back to get me. And if I see any deer and I shoot one, don't get out that stand no matter what till he gets back. So, yeah, I'm sitting there, and sure enough, deer, two or three deer come out there, and I shot one of them. Next thing I know, I'm on the ground. And all I think about is, I ain't thinking about the ground hurting me. I'm thinking about my daddy getting there and seeing me not me out that stand. And you know what he's going to do with me when I didn't even think about it. I done fell out that tree stand. I done climbed back up there before I even knew what happened. And then I look down there, I'm like, Lord, that's a wonder it didn't kill me, you know? But, yeah, we've had some times now.
So what I'm reading between, George, what happened? I know you talked a little bit about that.
Well, I come up on him. He was going up the street stand, and I kind of getting on him. He said, whoa, Daddy, whoa, wait just a minute. He says, the deer come out. I shot at him, and the gun kicked me out the tree stand.
Yeah,
that's awesome. Now, so you would have hunted. Talking to your mom and dad, you would have started hunting down, and like you guys hunt a lot of marshes and that kind of thing. So, what do you guys hunted out of a boat and different stuff like that? I mean,
We've hunted islands out of a boat. We've hunted the edge of the marsh on a boat. You know, get up there and turn loose. Might have been on, you know, property line there, you know, you got a little, you can't help where the dogs go, you know what I mean? We really didn't mean to get on nobody's property, but we might have sometimes, you know. But I remember especially we was hunting down on the marsh one night, and James Foster was with us, and you'd like this, Steve, because he loved blue dogs, and my daddy would give him hell about it, but he did, and he probably hunting some out of old Droop too, you know what I mean? But he actually, I heard him up there. I wasn't but about 8 years old, but I could tell what was going on. He was actually taking up for me. And he's told my daddy, he said, you gonna wait on that boy? He's about 400 yards by air, bogged down in that marsh. He says, come on, James Foster. And he said, that boy will catch up here in a little while. When we get to the tree, we'll wait on him there. And sure enough, he wasn't coming back to get me. I dug my way out of there, because them boots that I told you, them tennis shoes was in, they were stuck in the mud, so I had to pull them out, get them back on. But, yeah, that was some days. And I actually ended up with them. I don't know if I ever told you this or not, Steve, but I actually ended up with them two blue dogs.
You know who he got the blue dogs from? Who
did he get them from?
Me.
Yeah, and I couldn't believe that he would eat. He would tell me about that. He had some blue dogs, you know, or some English dogs, and I couldn't believe it. You know, he was a walker man. That's what I thought, you know. But
right. I remember a while back you sharing a story about a boat, something eating something out of the boat. Share that story a little bit.
Yeah, we was actually one morning had got up, or we'd coon hunted that night pretty much all night. And we actually went to go run traps, you know, because we had the fur house there. And we get, you know, headed back to the boat. My daddy snaps me on the shoulder there and says, hey, listen, I think somebody's trying to steal the boat out there. And we ease up there and we go to looking. And when you, if you ever been involved in a fur house there like that, there was 9 otters inside this boat. Well, I knew what my daddy had seen. He seen dollar signs when he seen them otters in the boat. Well, and we did have a gun. But in my eyes, all I could see was holes in the boat. You know what I mean? Right. But I think we did end up getting a few of them otters, but he let them get out the boat before he started shooting. You know what I mean?
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. When, so growing up as a kid, you did that or whatever. When did you first start getting into the competition side? What intrigued you about it? I know when you went with your dad, he competed, obviously he'd shared. But when would you first recall when you started competing with hounds, and what drew you to that side of it?
Well, what drew me to it is I remember, you know, back then when we was kids, you'd go to a UKC hunt, a $5 night hunt or whatever. There'd be 80, 90 dogs there hunting for a trophy. Well, all I wanted to do was win a trophy, I thought, you know. And then my daddy, he was winning, and he had plenty of trophies in the house there, you know. But then, you know, I was, 13, 14, and I seen the PKC side of it, or PCA back then, right? So, and then shortly after it went to PCA, it went to PKC, you know. But we started going to a few of them, and you know, I was hunting, you know, around Strickland and Kramer and Cecil and Buddy and Paul and all of them. That's when I started getting all them good lessons, you know what I mean?
Right.
And but yeah, I got I actually had a older black gentleman, Jack Short. He had bought a dog, and I went with this dog, and she treated 4 or 5 coons that night. In our country, if you treat 4 or 5 coons in a night, you done something, you know? So I had to have this dog, but I knew I didn't have no kind of enough money to get this dog, you know? But Mr. Jack, he wanted somebody to hound this dog in the hunts, but he couldn't walk too good, you know? So I started hounding the dog, and he gave me half over to do that. And we done a little bit of winning with her and everything, and nothing major or nothing, you know, but it felt good to me at the time because I was getting to compete, you know, and I'm very compatible, you know, and that feeds me, if you know what I mean there, you know?
Right.
And we, you know, I can remember one night me and him, you know, 2 or 3 in the morning coming home, a black man and a white man in a truck together. We get pulled over in Folkestone, Georgia, coming back from a coon hunt. And Mr. Jack told me, he says, "Now, you know, when they get up here and see a black man in here, they going to think we're doing a drug deal, you know." But me and him wasn't like that. We explained to the cop, you know, that we had been at a coon hunt, and he seen the dog back there and everything. And he said, "All right, well, Mr. Jack had a tail light out. That's what we got pulled over for. I think that's why he let me drive. I got the ticket for it." But anyhow, we just had a good time. Me and him hunting together all the time, and you know, just had fun.
Yep. Did you have I know for us as kids, when I got a little older and stuff like that, we had a lot of our friends that come over and hunted with us, and then some of them would go with us to the competition hunts and stuff like that. Was that kind of the same way for you guys, or was you more? Was it just more your guys' family and that side?
Oh, it was a bunch of guys that was friends of mine, and they loved my mom and daddy. They'd come and stay there at the house with us on Friday night, and some of them wouldn't even leave, you know, after Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. They'd stay for 3 or 4 more nights. Their mom and daddy wondered where they was at, and we'd be out there spending the night in the woods looking for the dogs we was hunting because, you know, the good dogs Mr. Johnny and Daddy took, we got to go take the ones that was just getting started that we had to wait to get treed all night. You know, I spent a many night in the woods out there, and my mama wondering where I was at, you know. And I didn't know where I was at, so I stayed there till daylight till I could get back.
Right.
But we was fortunate because we could turn loose right from the dog pen there at the house, you know. I can remember my daddy getting out there, and he might have him a few cocktails, you know, and he said, let's see what this one will do tonight, you know. Before I know it, we got 4 or 5 dogs turned out there that I got to go get, you know.
Right.
But I loved it, every minute of it. When I get, if you get, you know how it is, when a dog comes treed, it just makes your hair stand up. That's the ones you wanted to go to. Them other ones that didn't come treed real good, you knew you was going to a slick tree, so you really didn't want to walk to that one, you know?
Yeah. You know, growing up, I know for me, we didn't have a lot, but we had each other. You know what I mean? And, you know, I think in today's age that we live in and stuff, you know, I've shared with, you know, people a lot that, you know, although we didn't have a lot, we had more than most because we had each other as families. You know, and I can remember talking of that, you know, hunting, you know, we'd have a coon hound, but we didn't necessarily treat a coon with it early on because, you know, it's just the way it was. And, you know, I remember, because, hey, face it, times when we grew up, you know, there was a lot of years that we would get a birthday present 1 year, and wouldn't get a Christmas present, and then the following year, maybe vice versa. But, you know, we didn't know any different. We just thought that was a way of life, you know. We knew that our parents loved us, and, you know, I come from a family of 9. There's 9 of us kids, plus mom and dad, and to feed 11 was, that wasn't an easy task. But you know what, we never went hungry at home, and, you know, we always had a roof over our heads, and, of course, we ate a lot of simple meals, but, you know, my dad was an avid deer hunter and, never coon hunted, but he was an avid deer hunter. And, you know, there was a lot of times when, you know, that was a part of what we would, that was a part of what filled our freezer.
Oh, I know what you're saying, Steve. We ate a lot of deer meat back in the day and a lot of chicken. I'm talking about a lot of chicken. Sometimes we ate so much chicken, we didn't know whether to go to bed or go to roost. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, James, moving on from that. So, I know you had touched a little bit that you kind of got out of the bull riding when you had Colt or whatever. So, you have 2 boys. Is that right?
That's right.
Yeah, Colton and...
Colt and Justin.
Okay. And, yeah, I know that they're having... So, tell me a little bit on when they was growing up and, you know, taking and starting them into the hunting thing, kind of what was the same way it was started, you know, kind of the way you guys was started.
Yeah, when Colt was first born, you know, we, one, 2 years old, his mama was actually working night shift, and if I wanted to go hunting, I had to get my mom to babysit her. Either I, had to take him with me. Well, you know, them backpack-looking things you carry. Well, I'm telling you, I was the one doing that, carrying him through the woods. So I knew what time his mama was going to get off. So I'd run him back to my mama's house and get her to give him a bath because he's muddy from where we done fell down in the swamp. And my mama's, you know, chewing me out because I've had that baby out there with mosquitoes and in the mud and everything like that. But it's no greater feeling than having your boys out there with you like that, you know, don't care how big they are.
Yeah.
And I can still remember Cecil saying one night they Colt and Justin was bouncing back and forth in the back seat and we in the middle of a competition hunt, and he's like, you just gonna leave them kids? I said I'm trying to pay attention to my dog right now, Cecil, and their mama's on nights, and if I wanted to come to this hunt, they had to come with me.
Right.
So yeah, we just ain't no better feeling than that, you know, and seeing them boys win, it just don't get better than that. But they tickle me a lot, you know. They don't never want the dog you hunting until you start winning with them, you know.
Right. I think that goes with a little bit of all of us,
right?
So they would have hunted. Now, George, would have you remembered taking the grand boys hunting? I mean, would have you hunted with them quite a bit then too as they was growing up?
Yeah, I just
ride with them.
I'd take them, yeah. You know. Yeah, whatever, wherever it wanted to go, hell, I'd take them.
Yeah, I'd be out of town working, you know, going. I worked a lot out of town, so I missed a lot with them boys, and if y'all get me choked up here in a minute, don't y'all just hang with me. But I missed a lot of time with them boys because I went through the apprenticeship, and once I got done with that, I could actually go out of town and go to work. Matter of fact, you pretty much had to go out of town and go to work because there wasn't no work around the house there. And we got to go hunting and everything while I was there, you know, going through that apprenticeship and everything. But once I topped out, I had to go out of town and go to work. So, you know, they couldn't go hunting as much unless my daddy took them or mama would even loan them. They'd have a coon dog in the back of her car taking it to a competition hunt, you know. I couldn't believe she'd ever do that. She never would have put no dog in her car for me. But
them grandkids tend to change when it gets.
That's right. But you know, I'm so thankful to have so many people out there like daddy and mama, and you know, to let them boys and take care of them and help them and show them a little bit more than I didn't get to show them, you know, because I was out there working to take care of them. And you know, I got to thank Cecil Pittman. I mean, Cecil done a fabulous job. I mean, he taught Justin and Colt a lot. And, you know, they've all, you know, them two boys would walk to the end of the earth for Cecil. You know, that's how they feel about him because he was good to them.
He was one of the good guys, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was.
Still is.
Yes, he is. Yeah. And, you know, Kramer and Buddy and Paul, they all loved them. You know, they took care of them. And, you know, it was like they lived down in Waycross, Georgia, and, you know, getting their $25 and $30 lessons too, you know. But
Dad was footing the bill on this time.
Yeah, Dad was footing the bill this time. But.
Hey, finish up. I'm just going to.
No, go ahead, George.
Colt was probably 3, and I always kept him in the woods, and I had bought a four-wheeler, and I had him up here. And we was riding through the woods. Bam, that damn side-by-side come to a sudden stop. He went down like that and it cut his eye right there. And he was so tough. When he come up, he says, "All right, man, that's cool." And I seen his eye bleeding. I said, "Boy, your mama had me put in jail for child abuse." Got him back up there to camp. All them boys just took up with him and put a bandage on him. He wanted everybody to see that damn bandage, boy.
How old would he been around this?
About 3 years old.
About 3 years old.
Yeah, they loved the woods. And I remember one time I was working up in Alton, Illinois, and they got to come up there and see me. And I always lived out of a fifth wheel because I was always moving around, you know. And I'd actually come up where I could have me a dog with me. I had a kennel that would fold down off the back of that fifth wheel, and I mean, it was a mobile kennel, you know what I mean? It would fold up and fold down. I could keep my dog with me. Got kicked out of many campground for dog barking, but they come up there to stay with me one summer, and we got our actually, it was hunting season that thank Christmas time there, you know. So they was going to get to stay a couple weeks. And I get to go take them duck hunting for the first time. And, you know, you got to have a lab if you're going to go duck hunting. You ain't no real duck hunter if you ain't got a lab, right?
Right.
Well, we end up with a lab. And we was, Justin was actually probably about 3 years old. And Colt was up ahead of us, and you up there where y'all from, you know, you got to break ice to go to this duck blind. And we was breaking ice, and everybody knows what like a decoy boat is. Justin was too small to walk through that, so I put him in that decoy boat, and I was pulling him out across that pond. And the water got over the dog's head, and it started swimming there, you know, and that dog jumped up on that decoy boat. Before I knew it, Justin fell off in that frozen pond, and I just grabbed him up, and I start back to the truck, tell Colt to stay at the duck blind, y'all should go ahead, and I'll be back. I'm going to take him, get him warmed up, and get some clothes. And he started throwing a fit. I'm talking about pure fit. And I said, what do you want? I mean, I got to go get you warmed up. He said, just take me to the blind. I'll get in front of the heater there. But he wasn't leaving Colt to go somewhere and let Colt go duck hunt without him. You know what I mean?
Right.
So we got him there and got him stripped down and got him dried off, you know. And sure enough, we shot ducks all morning there. And if that had been me, I'd have went on to the house. You know what I mean?
Right.
But on that same trip there, when it come to the end of the 2 weeks, we had went to, I think it's the Bear Creek Classic over in Missouri. Is that what that is?
Yeah, they have it in the springtime.
Yep, and we had went over there, and we was hunting a dog called Crybaby, and we actually got in the Final Four that night. And I wish I could remember the guy's name that wanted to hunt it off, but he was hunting for Vogel. And I had to have them boys at the airport the next morning at 7 o'clock. And St. Louis, you know where the Bear Creek class is at. Yeah. It's about 2.5-3 hour drive. Well, it was either hunt or forfeit and take fourth, you know what I mean? Colt, you know, he says, oh, Daddy, we hunt. We'll make it to the airport, you know? So we hunt. We still end up taking fourth, so we should have just took fourth to start with. And then we take off to the airport, you know. We get to the airport. And I mean, barely make it to their flight, you know. And I'm nervous putting them on the plane by themselves anyhow. And so they get on the, I get them lined on there and they go walking on there. And I go to turn around to leave. And I feel Justin grab me by the leg. He done ran back off the plane talking about he ain't leaving. He's staying here where he can hunt. And Colt, the lady made Colt get out off because Justin ran off the plane. Now, what do? You can't beat your youngin' because he wants to stay here with you to go hunting, you know? So it's just hard. So I had to go to work the next day, and I had to get somebody else to take them to the airport so for me to, you know, because they were, I don't believe they was going to get on that plane if I took them. And I didn't want to beat them for not wanting to get on the plane and leave, you know what I mean? But, only thing they was worried about the deal was that if I made sure I brought that dog back to the house where they could hunt it, they'd go on home. And they'd went home, and I had to end up giving them that dog to take back hunt.
That's awesome. So you touched a little bit earlier on hunting with Paul and Buddy and that kind of thing. What was that early on? What was that experience like? I know, you know, Paul obviously, you know, had the Hardwood Dan dog, ran the Preena race, very competitive. And, but what was it like hunting with them guys early on?
Oh, it was great. I mean, they was there to win. They didn't care if you was 5 or 45, you know, or 65. They wanted to win. And everybody does. That's how we are. We all buddies standing around the campfire, but when we pull up in a cast, we ain't going to be buddies for 2 hours. I mean, we're going to be still friends, and we're going to present ourselves right. But, you know, we all want to win. That's what we're there for. But Paul, you know, he just loved every minute of the competition world. He and we all learned a lot from him, you know. But the most impressive thing to me was Buddy, you know, winning the Super Stakes the spring and the fall back-to-back. Had won it with Ann and Kahuna, you know. That was pretty impressive to me back then, you know, you win 2 back-to-back like that. And I actually was on the phone with Buddy yesterday, and Buddy told me, he says, it's amazing them guys look at me and say, you want $100,000. And he says, well, you just don't know. Them boys is winning $100,000 a weekend now, you know.
That's incredible.
And Buddy, he's got a coon pen there at his house now, and, you know, they all went – packing easy crazy there, you know. I actually had a few of them, you know, and I hunted a couple good ones and everything, and, you know, but they've been real good to Buddy, you know. But Buddy was good with puppies, you know what I mean? He liked messing with all of them puppies and everything, so, you know, we'd learn a little bit from him, you know, what to do and what Daddy had taught us, you know, and I just passed it on them boys where they can tune on their dog a little bit. Actually, they know more about it than I'll ever know right now, you know, if you ask them.
It's It's amazing how fast we grow out of it.
Exactly.
It's the way it is. James, what is probably one of your favorite dogs that you ever hunted? You know, maybe even growing up, competition. You know, what's one that stands out to you that, you know, we all have one or two favorites. What would that be for you?
Yeah, I'd have to say the one that Jerry Farmer won the Winter Classic with in 2010, I ended up getting him, and after that, and he was tight mouth on the ground, but he did not miss no coons at all. You know, he had every coon. It was like amazing to me how accurate he was. You know, you never went to a tree you didn't see a coon. You was expecting to see a coon, not hoping to see one. You know what I mean? And me and my daddy, we actually took him to the Florida State down there. And, you know, I didn't go to very many UKC hunts. And I'd know I needed a new dog box, and they said they was giving one of them away if you could win it. I didn't realize what they gave away. I mean, we couldn't hardly pack it all in the truck when we left from down there. But they asked us to guide. I said, "You want me to guide?" I ain't never guided no cats because we didn't have a club real close to the house there. And it was an hour and a half ride. My daddy tapped me on the shoulder with big eyes. He said, "He can't be beat at the house." He said, "If they want you to guide, you need to guide." I said, "That's a long ride." He said, "Don't worry, I'll drive." And sure enough, we took off. And before you know it, we got 725 plus in the first hour. And the rest of them is bailing out. They don't want no more of it. So me, I didn't know any better. When they quit, we still had like 30 minutes left to hunt. I thought we was done. I could have hunted 30 minutes by myself and probably got a better score. But in Florida, 725 plus is probably going to take you where you need to be, you know?
Right.
So we headed on back to the clubhouse, and me and Daddy's discussing whether he thought that we'd get in, you know? And I'm like, "Daddy, I don't know. I mean, I've seen some of them boys have, you know, 11, 1,200 points, you know." My dad said, "If they score 11, 1,200 points in Florida, we want to go see where they hunting at, because we got probably the best coon hunting to where we was at in Florida, you know." So we get there, and the closest thing to us is 175. Now they want to know how many coons have we rode on the scorecard, you know. But we didn't. Them guys that actually rode followed us all the way back, and they come back and, you know, told everybody what a good job the dog had done, you know. The handler wasn't very good at the time, but the dog done real good. Because one time during that cast, you know, when I told you he wasn't but a quarter strike dog, you know, I tried to get a little bit of help for him over there and tried to get him struck in where we cut loose. Well, what little I didn't know is he peeled behind me and I didn't see him, but everybody else on the cast, including my daddy, seen him. And I had struck him, so he should have really had 775 because I got him minus 50 points because I struck him and he wasn't on that side of the road where they had all seen him go back behind me, because right after it happened, he come treed, you know, over there about 200 yards on the other side of the road.
Oh, yeah.
So
absolutely. So that would have been one of the first ones, or one of the ones that you did. Now, any other ones? I mean, I know you've competed in, of course, I know you worked a lot, but you competed in the hunts whenever you could. Any other hunts that come to mind that you enjoyed to be a part of?
Oh, yeah. Like in my younger days, we first started, you know, going to the, when I say bigger hunts, it would be $1,000 added, you know, and you thought that was something. And I mean, I was sitting in there, and I remember when, you know, they have the hunt in Waycross, the Swampland Jamboree every year. It was down in Patterson, Georgia, before they moved it to Waycross. And Daddy remembers that. Me and him was down there, and we went down there, and we won a couple casts that weekend. But I remember John Strickland had a blue dog called Knothead, and I drawed him that night, and I would have swore that had to have been the best blue tick that ever lived at that time. You know what I mean? And he was nice. He just treed 4 or 5 coons behind where we was at. I don't think he left 100 acres and treed 4 or 5, you know? And then it wasn't very long after that, they were still having it in Patterson, and Strickland and Kramer had habit. And then you see them in a tuxedo, you know how cute they was in that.
I think we all remember that cover picture.
Yeah, so, you know, I said, man, they must be making a killing with these dogs, you know? And then I got to realizing, man, they must have a lot of money because they going broke if they messing with these dogs. But, nah, John and Kramer and all them, they do. They want to be winners like we all do, you know? They just good people, all around good people.
Yeah, you know, I've often said, if the hunt stopped today, I'd still hunt. I grew up around hounds just like you guys did all my life, you know, from the time I was 6, 7 years old. And I think it's when you do that, there's something that is engraved in you that you can't get away from, you know. But I also, you know, I've met some of the finest folks. Some of my best friends today got introduced to me through being a houndsman. And, you know, as you get to know them and hang out with them and you know, as I get older, I enjoy that side of it as much, if not more, than the hunting side, you know, the competing side. Now, don't get me wrong, James. I think we all still have that competitive spirit in it. Your dad had shared earlier that he'd still go to every tree if he could get there.
That's right.
And I don't think that ever leaves us. I really don't.
That's
know?
Right.
And so it's most certainly, I know for me, I was very fortunate that I was allowed to be around that growing up, and being a third generation houndsman like you are, growing up, you know, it's a way of life for a lot of us, you know, so... Absolutely. Well, before we close this down or whatever, I'd love to hear from you and your dad, kind of what's it meant to be a houndsman all your life? Maybe some of the experiences that you had, that kind of thing, before we close down today's episode. Anything that you guys would love to share?
I just loved it. Always did. I mean, it wasn't that I had to. I wanted to. And another thing, it didn't get too rough. It didn't get too bad. I went.
Okay, go ahead.
And that's all I gotta say. You know, I was good at it and knew I was good at it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I think, you know, for me as well, there was so many things. It made up so much of our life, you know, when we did it, you know. And I remember vividly coming home one night, talking about that. Coming home one night and hunting with a neighbor. I didn't have a driver's license, so I was hunting with the neighbors, and you was talking about the otter and the boat. And we was hunting with the neighbors, and we seen these 3 big great raccoons cross the road. And of course, you know, back then, being 14, 15 years old, hey, one of them was going to make a big difference, a big dent, if we could get it and, you know, saw the hide. And so we pulled over and put our dogs on these 3 coon. And the woods that they was headed toward, we could be there. And so they'll get to the edge of the woods, they'll get treed. And we got to get up and do chores the next morning. And so we're thinking this is going to be pretty quick, pretty easy. The famous, infamous last drop, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And these dogs take after these coons. And all of a sudden, they get about halfway across this field. And, of course, back then, I believe me and my brother just had flashlights. And the guy that we was hunting with, he may have had a little nightlight back then. They was fairly new at that point in time. We couldn't afford them. And these dogs make a right-handed turn, and they head straight north, kind of going to like a farmhouse. Of course, you know, we get nervous now. I mean, me and my brother are 13, 14 years old. The guy that's carrying us around hunting, he may have been 17. And we spin this little flatbed truck around, and we go back up the hill. When we get up there, you know, we don't have tracking systems. We get up there, we're trying to listen for where these dogs are at. We can't really hear them. Well, we figure out they're across the road in this old barn foundation. Now, we don't know who owns that barn foundation, and we're trying to get these dogs out of there just to get out of there. Make a long story short, we're hunting three dogs, and they come back across the road before we can get them caught. And the next thing we know, they're up underneath this house in a crawl space that's about 2.5 foot tall, fighting these coons. And we just know we're in so much trouble. You know, for me, I mean, I was born and raised Amish, so I mean, how am I going to explain that to my dad? And so we go over there, we knock on the door, nobody comes to the door. And we're like, man, nobody's home. But now you have to understand, the heat ducts and stuff are running underneath this house, and I mean, it's like crazy. And we dig underneath here, I mean, it's a disaster. We finally get the dogs dug out of there, we don't get any of the coon. The one dog actually gets out of the crawl space, gets into the garage, and this coon's on the side of the wall. And anyways, make a long story short, we finally gather these dogs up, and about the time we're getting the last one dug out, the light comes on in the house. And we knocked on the door. I mean, these dogs are howling underneath there, and now we know we're in trouble. Well, about like that, the light goes back off. And we finally get this last dog gathered up, and we walk out there, and we get them all loaded up, and about the time we're getting ready to leave, lights everywhere. And the next thing you know, we've got cops in front of us, behind us, beside us. I mean, they got us up against the truck. And what happened was, there was an older lady that lived there, and she was deaf. So here all this commotion's going on, and it's 4:30 in the morning, and somebody had actually left and went to work and thought we was robbing the place, called us in, and we had to try to explain this whole thing. And not alone on that, we get home at 5 o'clock in the morning, ready for chore time. So Dad was upset, but we had to go back up there and climb underneath that crawl space, me and my brother did, and put them heat ducts and stuff back together. So, hey, these dogs can get in some situations. But, you know, looking back at it, it's the fun memories that we had of that.
That's right. And you know, you everybody knows this. If you love coon hunting, you know this is how you really tell if you love it. You're sitting there all day, pacing the floor, waiting on it to get dark. That's all you care about is... And when time changes, that's the most thing that makes you more mad than anything. You like, I got to wait another extra hour to go hunting tonight, you know? And what made me think about that, I had bought this dog one time, and I couldn't wait till it to get dark, you know? And I'd spent all the money I had on this dog, and I knew that my wife wasn't going to be real happy about it, you know? And we cut this dog loose, and he treated coon. Looked pretty decent on it. And next drop, we cut him loose, and he's driving the track down through there, doing good. Next thing you know, I don't hear him no more. Just quits, you know. And that's when they had quick track, you know. You could beep, beep, beep. And I finally got him located and walked in there, and he's laying there panting, can't get up, nothing. And I'm like, what in the world? I just spent this money on this dog, you know. And anyhow, take him to the vet and come to find out he had gotten yellow jackets and he's allergic to yellow jackets. Here I've got a coon dog that we fitting turn loose in the woods every night that's allergic to yellow jackets. And sure enough, that man actually gave me my money back for him. I was glad of that because I didn't know how many times we was going to run into yellow jackets, you know. But I just want to say one more thing about them two boys of mine that I'm proud of him, you know, and I think Colt's more proud of Justin for what he's done, you know, as far as winning the Super State and stuff like that.
He won the youth world
and he won the Super Stakes, and you know, that night I was there, but it was Colt was there with me, and it was like more fun for Colt than it was for Justin, you know. And Justin, just a lot of people, you know, don't understand how lucky and fortunate they are to win something like that, because people hunt their whole life to do that, you know. And I just wanted to let them know I'm proud of them, and they really are good boys. And I know I've been hard on them sometimes, but they good boys, and I love them, and that's all that matters, you know.
Absolutely. I think that way of life You know, it's what makes us what we are, but it's that way of life. I think, you know, my dad, you know, he was a little tough on us, but I can tell you this, it's what made us who we are today. And, you know, in the day and age that we live in, I'm glad, I'm proud of the way I was raised, you know.
That's right.
Taught to respect people, and that was something that wasn't, that was non-negotiable. And, you know, absolutely. Well, hey, it's been really awesome sitting here with you guys. I've enjoyed every minute of it.
Me too.
And looking forward to the part three of this series of the family tradition. We're actually going to be hearing from them in the next segment, and really looking forward to that as well. So with that, thank you guys, and we're going to sign off.
All right. Thank you, Steve.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.